That's right, we are back with episode 524 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and everything's coming to such a horrible end.
And this is Bronson from Australia, and Gary, look, we know it's been COVID affairs, we know it's been tough, but you just need to hang in there, buddy.
It's not easy. I'll try. Where's IL when I need him?
He's probably hiding from all of the content that's coming out in this week and in the next few weeks. But we seem to be finally in back from the winter hiatus here in the States, and all of the shows are kind of ending, returning, hitting their mid-season stride. I don't know what you want to call it, but there's quite a lot of it going on. And along the way, we have also a lot of news. So spoilers aplenty, which means that we could probably use a bit of a disclaimer.
Certainly. We'll talk about just about anything that might have come up in the news, on TV, in the movies, and eventually on all of these episodes. So if you haven't been keeping up, they'll be horribly spoiled. So as ever, we'll try and give you a week to catch up so we don't do that to you.
That's right. And let's see. Let's go ahead and start with this first article, if I can get it to come up in a timely fashion. And this is more renewal information. That's right. So still some straggling news coming out of the TCA press tour. And this one is probably good news for those who are enjoying this first season of Gotham. It has been renewed for a second season. Along the way, we also have news that Brooklyn Nine-Nine has been renewed for a third season, and the Yay! Relatively new show Empire, which I think there's been all of one or two episodes, is now renewed for a second season. So let's see, is there anything? While I'm looking to see if there's anything else here, what do you guys think about this news?
Well, we're big Brooklyn Nine-Nine fans in my household, so my son is more than thrilled about that, and you know we enjoy it. It's fun fare. Gotham is coming along, and I'm glad they're giving it the chance to keep growing. I could see good things coming, and I hope they arrive.
Yeah. If nothing else, maybe if they haven't had the chance to course correct enough in the first season, perhaps they will have a few moments to sit back and really rethink things for the second season, but there we are. Let's see, Bronstone, if you could take the next item, please.
I think I can probably manage that. So, there's a bit of decent amount of talk about Captain America 3. The latest casting news to come out is that Scarlett Johansson will indeed reprise her role as Black Widow in Captain America Civil War, which is scheduled for release next year or the year after, not too long. But yeah, so this is coming after the announcement that a little bit after the announcement that Robert Downey Jr. was going to appear in as Tony Stark in the film. According to the to the news report that lists it, Civil War will feature the titular hero Captain America, played by Chris Evans, facing off against Tony Stark, played by Robert Downey Jr., and Scarlett Johansson's Black Widow, along with the Winter Soldier, the Falcon, the Black Panther, and Crossbones will all have to take sides. In the somewhat epic fight that they're promising. The article also mentions that Daniel Brühl, who you might recognize from Rush, in which he starred with, I think it was Rush, which he starred with Chris Hemsworth, and was it The Fifth Estate, I think it was, where he co-starred with Benedict Cumberbatch, past and future Marvel stars. So that actor's going to be appearing in an unknown role, which has been speculated to maybe be a Doctor Strange villain. But yeah, so, and then there it is at the end of the article. May 16th, 2016 is when we're expected to see Captain America Civil War, and I, for one, am quite excited for it.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything yet that makes me worried about this film. It seems really a bit, just as Captain America Winter Soldier was enormously important to the MCU, this seems like it's going to be like doubling down on that, even as Age of Ultron is doubling down on what the Avengers film brought to the table. Anyone else have thoughts about this? Looks like they're moving right along when it comes to the MCU. Maybe some other corporate entities should take a note on this and let the creators create. Gary, this next item that we have on the list, if you could take that, and it pertains directly to this kind of commentary.
Well, yes, it does. As you were talking about some other renewals by Fox, you know, Gotham, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and Empire, one name that was missing from that was Sleepy Hollow. They've been put on a sort of a wait-and-hold list because the network wants to see some changes to the show. They're really not happy with the level of entry difficulty that currently exists in the series. It's a very serialized type of storyline where if you've missed an episode or two, you almost feel like you can't jump back into the storyline. And the network really isn't thrilled with that. They want it to change. They want it to be a little bit more episodic. Now, they're not clearing house as far as creative talents or writing people go, but they've let them know that that it's a little, the stories are a little too involved and that they don't feel there's any place for the casual viewer in the story that they've crafted. And so they've asked them to break it up a little bit. And the writers, you know, are going to try and do that to some extent. They don't feel that they need to necessarily do a whole, you know, episodic storyline that eats up the whole season where so to keep their jobs, they will compromise and try and break up or at least allow some easier entry points for casual viewers. So yay and nay. Don't get me wrong. There were a few stinker episodes this year that probably could have been filled with something else. So I can't say the network is totally off base. But at the same time, you have to admire the writers that can craft, a 14 to 18 hour storyline and pull it off at all. So personally, I'm happy. I think this whole storyline dragged a little bit last season, so I'm glad to see it broken up a little bit, but just for this show. But I'm hoping it doesn't signal something for, you know, other series that tend to serialize themselves a little bit more. I don't think not serializing is an answer for every show, but for this one, it might be.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm of two minds about this. Edmund, do you want to jump in on it?
What annoys me a little bit about this, I didn't feel that it was necessarily the show getting too serialized, but the way they were messing with the cast dynamics and bringing in Holly, having Captain Irving sort of just out of the picture, and bringing in the new commander, and after having developed this great chemistry between those core members of the cast, the problem was more than messing with that, and especially with John Noble as well. I mean, where he wound up being so much just the sort of puppet master behind the scenes and not as much an integral part of the action. So it certainly doesn't, I don't think it bodes well for the show that there's this sort of meddling going on. But I am worried that the focus may actually be in the wrong place.
Go ahead. Oh, sorry, you go. Nope. No, I was just going to say this talk about we have to someone like getting told you need to make it more episodic to try and bring in viewers and stuff like that. I can think of a bunch of shows where something similar has happened. The one that jumped straight to mind was Veronica Mars, where they got the show got very similar marching orders in the third season. Like, oh, you're too serialized. We need you to be, a little more one and done. And so for the third season of that show, they instead of having one big storyline over the course of a whole season, they change it to, okay, we're going to have three smaller storylines. Like the first chunk of episodes can be the first storyline, and then we're going to wrap that up, and then people can come in relatively fresh to the second storyline, and then wrap that up, and stuff like that. And it worked so well that they got the network cut down their episode order by two and said, that third story arc you were going to do? Never mind. They're all going to be episodic now. And that worked brilliantly for that show because it got cancelled for and then didn't come back as a movie for a long time. And somehow I doubt that Sleepy Hollow is going to have is going to be resurrected as a film somewhere down the line if it were to get cancelled. So yeah, this is very bad news for the show.
Well, it's not good. Not from my point of view. It's not good in that they're not giving them a nod for a third season and saying, hey, next year, can you maybe, you know, make it a little more accessible? They're almost – either they've made this decision behind closed doors weeks ago and we're seeing that now and they're only making the announcement to try and make it clear to the fans that they need to show up to get the ratings up, or – there's a lot more episodes in this season than I seem to recall. But it seems to me like the network coming out and basically saying, hey, we're going to go more episodic because the show is struggling and we want to see what happens when that's done this late in the game. It's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy, it seems like to me. That said, if they were to go more episodic, is this the kind of show that could do that and survive? Yeah, I think it could. There's nothing that requires this show to be serialized to any high degree. I think I agree with Edmund that the problems this season have been far more about the cast gelling and how the storyline has made that struggle harder more than anything. I don't think it's necessarily a barrier to entry as it is just an overall shift that they've been struggling to really perform. But at any rate, we'll see where this goes, but I think they could do a more episodic type of show and it should be fine if they could focus on the characters in the correct way. And that's kind of where the problem lies. Let's see, Edmund, if you could take the next one. So, you know, Fox is hedging their bets about Sleepy Hollow and then something like this comes out.
Also coming out of the recent announcements was that apparently they are considering bringing back 24. Howard Gordon, Evan Katz, and Matty Cotto have been working on developing a new series, and with the major caveat that this would be 24 without Jack Bauer returning. Kiefer Sutherland has made it pretty clear that he doesn't really want to come back, even for a short little wrap-up season, like some series have been doing. So it does seem almost sacrilegious to consider 24 without Jack Bauer, but that is apparently what we may be seeing perhaps as early as 2016. I know coming out of that last series, After Live Another Day, there was some speculation along these lines, and if it goes in the direction of Kate and Chloe perhaps trying to find Jack and then going off on another mission, depending on what they find, I think this actually could work. But, of course, I have nowhere near as much time invested in Jack Bauer as you and Braun Stumm do.
Yeah, this would be like... If they had maybe, like, started to do something like this around season 2 or season 3, when the show was still relatively new and stuff like that, then we could have rolled with it because that show had such a high turnover of so many people dying or getting out of the game and stuff like that, that if your hero were to be removed from the show relatively early in the run, you would set the tone for you would not only set the tone for okay, no one is safe, but you'd also have create a kind of an environment. You could set people up for the idea that we're not necessarily going to have Spooks is an example that comes to mind. Of a show that did a really good job. It was a UK show, obviously, and UK has a bit of a different sensibility, but that show introduced one character as the lead agent guy, and then after about three series, he decided to leave, and so a new came in, and they were the lead, and then and because they had that kind of turnover, they were able to write it in a lot better and stuff like that. You would have the new guy could show up before he becomes the new main guy. But after nine seasons, to suddenly tell people it's like right we're gonna have new people taking over, like it's just 20. It's become too entrenched, the idea that Jack Bauer is the hero of this show, of this franchise. And yeah, I think if they wanted to do it, then they would have to. It couldn't just be the next season of 24 starring new people. Like they would really have to. Distinguish it. They would have to go into like spin-off territory, sort of thing to if they wanted it to fly. I mean, that's just my opinion.
Or it would turn into, like Edmund was saying, the season that was. It would almost turn into the eighth season of the X-Files, where the only way that they feel like they could sell it to the audience would be to have. You know, Kiefer Sutherland wouldn't be there, but Jack Bauer would be an integral part of the plot. And the problem with that is that you don't honor the end of Jack Bauer's plot arc or character arc by letting him linger in the background of his own series.
Who killed Jack Bauer? I can see it.
Well, we kind of know who that was.
Yeah.
If they tried to do that, it would be pretty.
Who killed him?
It wouldn't be very mysterious. That would be like rocking up to Return of the Jedi, and the plotline is, who killed Han Solo? Well, I feel like they kind of might have set that up a bit too well that we're going to go that way.
But at any rate, yeah, I don't know. They can, a spinoff wouldn't be bad. I wouldn't have nearly as many problems with that. But I don't know. There's other things about this that bother me. However, you know, or perhaps equally troubling, Bronstum, maybe this next one.
Alrighty, if I can get my laptop to not be stupid. So 5 minutes would be nice. So, the X-Files may return to television.
I want to believe.
And they will not move forward without creator Chris Carter. So yeah, Fox is in early talks to bring back the X-Files.
I just had this idea of the smoking man with an e-cigarette.
There are a few different problems to this one in my mind. While you think of exactly how you're going to phrase yours, Bronstum. First of all, the fact that this is, that they make it seem like it's extremely conditional, but considering that both Duchovny and Anderson have already stated that they are willing to come back in some shape or form, especially if it's on TV, it would need to be some kind of limited series, not an open-ended thing. So not unlike Live Another Day.
Gillian Anderson's got commitments, and I would kind of much rather she keep her existing commitments and go back to the X-Files. That's just me.
But what's Chris Carter doing? Getting his Amazon shows canceled, but that's about it. This has the possibility of happening, and all I can say is that they kind of already created X-Files Season 10 in comic book form and reminded me how irritating the kind of like string you along with really vague, mysterious stuff that you'd never have the feeling that the writers know what they're talking about. That was what the X-Files did for years, and it kind of came to a point where it was very clear that they were just writing themselves into 1,000 corners and just putting whatever they thought was cool in every time they wanted to do a quote-unquote mythology episode. Any limited series is going to almost have to be mythology-based in order to appeal to the fan base that is still there to see it. Not only that, but the fact that they definitely want to have Duchovny and Anderson come back means that it's going to be most likely Mulder and Scully romance to the hilt, which, not to bring back the battles of old, but there was a large contingent of fans that got annoyed that that's what the focus of the show became. And I don't know. This seems like, guys, either make a third film and just wrap it all up or just let it die already. But there are a lot of people that are excited about this. I don't know. Bronstum, you were going to add your thoughts into this.
Now, admittedly, I'm coming at this from someone who's never sat down and watched all the X-Files in its entirety. I think I've seen the majority of the first three or four seasons. The reputation that the X-Files has with me is being that show that promised a lot of story arc, like, you know, big mythology, stuff like that, and then just sort of really it really never delivered. And mind you, part of the reason why I've heard as much about the X-Files reputation is because people kept comparing it to Lost, and that always made me angry, because Lost actually, not getting off topic. Whether or not you're excited about this or not is predicated on, do you think that the people who made the X-Files, like who made the show that was good back in the day and stuff like that, could come back and make something as good as it was in the glory days and wrap up the show? And from what I can tell, it's like those same people delivered like 3, 4, 5 years worth of evidence that no, they really couldn't bring this to a satisfying conclusion. So why would you, I don't know, why would you want them to come back and muddy the waters even further?
Yeah. Especially when the second film that came out that was set after the series was critically and fan panned, to say the least. Just to add a little bit of context to this, the whole thing about 24 coming back for a limited run again, the X-Files coming back for a limited run, they've also even said Prison Break they're thinking of bringing back for another limited run.
How would you do that? Like, that's
there'll
a terrible
idea. There'll be nobody on Flash, I know.
Well, you don't end more definitively than Prison Break did.
Yeah,
I mean,
if you watch through to the end of that show, it seems like, yeah, that they really put a nail in it. I was surprised that they were able to come back and do that one little movie thing that was okay but not brilliant. Part of the reason they did that was because essentially in the finale of the show proper, they ended on a distant finale kind of thing where it was like a year or so or 6 months or something later, and made a reveal that like something had happened that was just completely out of left field, and a lot of people with Vez were just like, wait, what? That happened? Really? And you're going to give us nothing on it? So they came back and they did this little TV movie that was like, okay, we're going to give you something on that.
Not only that, but they had put together it wasn't really a backdoor pilot. They put together a pilot for a spinoff of Prison Break that had female characters from the show as well as a new cast in a new Prison Break situation. And they basically were like, well, we've got this footage in the can, and we need to really explain that ending a lot better. Let's put together this package and see what happens. So they've tried this, to put it bluntly. And then
there was that other show. I think, John, you told me about this way back in the day, but there was another show where they basically had one of the Prison Break characters show up as their character after the events of the series. It's like, there's nowhere else to take this.
Came back in on another show. I forget what that was. It was by the same people, and it was on like
not Arrow.
It was completely no. It was like something Kings. It was like Getaway Kings or something like that.
Yeah, I know the one you're talking about. But just the fact that they bring this. And the reason I'm harping on so much about Prison Break is because the fact that they're bringing up this as an example just speaks to the mindset behind this push. This isn't we've got these properties that are unfinished. They've still got untapped potential. There's still storylines we can resolve, stuff like that. It's like, no, they don't know a damn thing. These producers, these executives, whatever, they don't know a damn thing about these properties. They just see this was popular and 24, Live Another Day worked okay. So let's just see how much more we can milk these
Yes, exactly.
And that's why, and that's a big, that's part of why I think, I have other issues with the X-Files example, but all the rest of them, it's just like, yeah, this is why they're not going to work, because it's completely coming from the wrong direction. There's no creative motive. There's no artistic motive here. It's just a money grab, which is all the more disappointing given the fact that Live Another Day came out, and I thought was quite good, and I thought brought in a bit more resolution and stuff like that from a franchise that ended, in my opinion, a bit abruptly.
Yeah, it was – Live Another Day was giving 24 as a franchise a proper ending because the film franchise never happened. Prison Break and the X-Files don't need that, in my opinion. As much of a huge fan of the X-Files that I was, I don't really feel like it needs to come back. But, I don't want this to become the show devoted to our frustrations with Fox and them kind of going back into – just brain dead mode in terms of how they are running the network. Let's go into some other types of news here. Gary, maybe you have something better to tell us about.
Well, yeah, I mean, the news I'm talking about wasn't really unexpected and was hinted at for a while, but Patrick Stewart has confirmed that both he and Sir Ian McKellen, well, I guess it's Sir Patrick Stewart as well, both sirs, will not be returning to the X-Men franchise. As they've hinted on, the new X-Men movie is going to be set in the 1980s, and Professor X and Magneto are both supposed to be much younger men. And as a result, those roles will not be reprised by Mr. Stewart or McKellen's. Although they shouldn't take it too personally, they're recasting several different roles, including Cyclops, Jean Grey, as well as Storm. So they are making an effort to definitely cater to a younger viewing audience, or at least present younger actors in these roles as they go up against the big bad for the next villain, Apocalypse. So it's a little sad. They've done definitely good by the roles. I feel in some ways, especially Stewart has really personified the role to such an extent that it'll be hard to separate him from the character. But times do go on, and of course, I'm sure the new actors are significantly less expensive. So we can only hope.
It's not really a classic case of like of recasting. I mean, it's Apocalypse is really the continuation of the first class timeline, stuff like that. I mean, McKellen and Stewart. I love Patrick Stewart as Xavier. I love Ian McKellen as Magneto and all that stuff. But they're not appearing in Apocalypse for the exact same reason that they did appear in X-Men First Class, because this is this is set in an earlier part of an early point in the timeline. And really, the only reason they appeared in Future Past was because they had a storyline ready made that allowed them to use both casts. But I feel like that Days of Future Past, the way it ended, to me, in that film, that okay, the direction they're taking the franchise now, like what at least the next movie and probably any future movies for the time being, are really going to be in that past sub franchise, I guess, in which you've got James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender playing Xavier and Magneto and doing fantastic jobs of it.
Oh, very much so.
While I'm a little I don't know. I'm not disappointed that Stewart and McKellen aren't going to be appearing in the new film, because I was never expecting them to appear. I thought that the Days of Future Past was a great send off for the actors in those roles and for a lot of these other actors in those roles, and as for the recasting of some other roles, I think we'll get into that a little later. But it's not a it's a case of like it's set in an earlier part of the franchise.
I didn't mean it to feel that they'd been pushed out. I did enjoy their performances, and I'll miss seeing more of them, I guess, is how what I meant to say.
Fair enough. Let's see. The next one, I believe, goes to me, and maybe I was trying to avoid it.
I'm surprised you included it.
Here's some. I only included this for the sheer absurdity of it. And perhaps to say, did Mandy Patinkin see what was going to happen in the next season of Homeland and just decide he needed to clear his brain of anything of value for a little while? Mandy Patinkin has decided to take up the voice acting challenge of Papa Smurf in the Smurfs reboot. Here's yet another...
Alas, poor Gargamel! I knew him! This half. He's really stretching his range now.
Yes. Damn it, Carrie. Those Smurfs. Beep, 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 beep. Anyway. The thing that really gets me here is that they're saying Smurfs reboot. Smurfs need to reboot? Really?
Please, please tell me it's going to be a gritty Christopher Nolan-esque reboot. Because yeah, there is really no way that I'm surprised that whoever I'll be very surprised if whoever was drafting this press release was not just completely cacking themselves, was not laughing so hard they had stitches and they had to keep control Z-ing because they just kept falling against the keyboard. They were laughing that hard. I mean, good lord, who the hell thinks that the Smurfs need not just more time on the big screen? It's like, you know what the problem is with this thing? It's like, we need to reboot. That'll
someone
fix
just
it.
Passed out at the very notion of it. That's what. Okay. Gary, help us here. Give us something better to work with.
Oh, geez. I suppose it could be a little bit better than that. Series Powers, being brought to us by PlayStation, of all people, has announced that they will begin their season premiere on March 10th. The first three episodes of the series are all going to be released immediately, and then the subsequent episodes out through number 10 will start debuting each following Tuesday. This is yet another chip into the network model, and more independent producers are airing their wares without being on television or cable. So they've finished producing all 10, so they're already in the can, so I doubt we'll have to, number one, worry about any episodes not coming to fruition or any substantial shifts throughout the season, since everything's already in the can. If anybody is interested in this, they will also be doing a comic book tie-in to the series, of course. And I believe this is going to be actually Sony's first series on the PSN network.
Yes, it will. This is not unlike a little while ago, Microsoft was also trying to put together a studio to make new content, and I believe that they made one show also, and then they kind of folded. So hopefully, I think Sony is looking for a little bit better success than that. Power's at least a genre. I'm not familiar with the property, but what I've seen so far, I'm not that worried about it, but we shall see. Bronston, this maybe is a little more worrisome.
Okay, so the sequel to World War Z will start with a clean slate. There's really very little information in this article. That's,
well, they said it was a clean slate.
Appropriately.
Yeah, the film will be directed by Juan Antonio Bayona. I'm possibly mispronouncing that, and written by Steve Knight. Knight has told some reporters that the sequel to World War Z will likely be pretty different from the original film. He says, and I quote, "It's not quite like the other. We're starting with a clean slate. When they've signed off, we're on."
What?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll tell you what this is. This is called "We Can't Get the Cast That We Had in the First Movie to Come Back, Whoever Survived, So We Need to Start Somewhere Else.
Which is saying something, because the first World War Z, like, this was Brad Pitt's pet project ever since the original book came out. And I can see why. It's a fantastic book, even though the format doesn't necessarily lend itself well to a film. I read the film and I think it's like you do it more like a miniseries. Like, you format it like, say, Band of Brothers or something. Apparently no one's coming back. The talent in the original one included Drew Goddard, Damon Lindelof, J. Michael Straczynski, Mark Forster. This is quite possibly the most pointless news article I've ever read.
Well,
like, we're making
a movie. Oh. Maybe we're not sure yet. No, if they let us. I don't know.
Maybe.
Gary, we're going to skip the next one and leave it till the end, just because I want it to have room to breathe. So
yes,
I'll just move on to the next one here. And AKA Jessica Jones, which is one of the upcoming Marvel series on Netflix, has had some of its audition reels release online. And apparently everything seems to point to the Purple Man as one of the primary villains, which anyone who knows the story of the Jessica Jones character would realize why that is significant. Let's just say that Kilgrave, the Purple Man, does some pretty questionable things to Jessica Jones. So maybe hinting that they are going to retain some of that darker edge that a lot of the Jessica Jones story had in that comic run. So we shall see. This, I feel, is a bit more hopeful news for genre fans. Network notwithstanding.
Yeah. Yes, the Red Mars project that Spike TV is doing has announced who they've brought in to write it, and that would be none other than J. Michael Straczynski, which certainly bodes well for the quality of the adaptation, and it does kind of amuse me. We're talking about this after World War Z, of course, since he did start off on the script of that, and as Bronstein just mentioned, then wound up having many, many other hands helping to shape that pie, such as it was. So we will just keep our fingers crossed that they will, in fact, let JMS have at it and stick to what he comes up with, because I think that's a damn fine collaboration between original author and adapting author.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. If nothing else, between the source material and JMS, hopefully the network will allow this to breathe as it should. Gary, the next one, if you don't mind.
Yes. Unexpected, and I could only help but smile when I heard this news. Star Trek III has found a new writer. Now, we've heard all the hubbub and drama over Orci leaving the project, and this left the movie without a screenwriter or director. However, not to worry, they did bring in the Fast and Furious director, Justin Lin, to sit in the big chair, I guess you'd say.
That's always a good thing.
Yes. But they really sort of left us hanging on the script. And now we found out that Scotty himself, Simon Pegg, will be I don't believe it's fully authoring, but co-authoring part of the script as well. Now, before you go off the edge, if you're not familiar with some of Mr. Pegg's other work, I suggest that you immediately run out or download Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and especially The World's End to see what he is capable of. Now, admittedly, these are all rather farcical items. However, it's
they're also still damn good action movies.
Yeah. But it still shows that, you know, he knows how to write things well, and I was very encouraged. I'm sort of curious where the humor will end and the drama might pick up. But short of that concern, I actually felt much better hearing that he was going to be attached to the project in more than an acting role. So I think it's going to be a nice fun ride, and I'm not saying that we should necessarily expect a Trouble with Tribbles episode level comedy, but given the heavy weight of the first two movies, I could use a little more humor in the J.J. Abrams universe. So I'm looking forward to it. Were you guys smiling, thrilled, concerned? What were your thoughts?
I was pretty excited by that news, actually. And, yes, I mean, certainly Simon Pegg knows the genre. And, I'm thinking this is quite a good development.
I can't help but think that this could help moderate the concern over Justin Lin. Gary, here's the what you were searching for. Being in the driver's seat.
I really didn't want to go quite there, but yes.
It was hanging so low on the tree, it deserved to be picked. All right, Bronstum, I know what you had to be happy with this, but why don't you move on to the next article, as we are running somewhat low on time.
Alrighty then, I'll try and make it quick. Where's my thing? Okay, so Melissa Benoist, who is a star of Whiplash and of Glee for two seasons, has been cast in the CBS adaptation of Supergirl. As Supergirl, obviously. CBS has had this show in development. They finally cast as Supergirl. This is the, interesting enough, the second Glee alumni to play a DC superhero, the first one being Grant Gustin of The Flash. Apparently, the Whiplash can be seen currently, if anyone's curious whether or not she's a good actress or whatnot. Also in this particular article is further fuel on the fire of speculation whether or not Supergirl will be taking place in the same universe as Arrow or Flash. While it will be on in the CW, or co-owns the CW, the show will be executive produced by Greg Berlanti, who also is also an executive producer on Arrow and The Flash. People on the more creative side of things are saying that they definitely would like to have some crossovers happening, but people on the CBS side of things are saying, yeah, it's probably more of a long shot. But yeah, so there's a Supergirl has been cast for a new series. Personally, I'm hoping that they can put it into the same universe because I'd like them to get a bit more full on with the inclusion of DCU properties. But
I don't have too many complaints because, I mean, while there are a couple people that are on Glee that are abysmal, I don't think the problem with Glee is necessarily the casting. I think it's more the writing. I think it's all the writing. Let's put it that way. Edmund, since we just brought up Fox again, and I don't think we've quite whipped that dead horse enough.
Yeah, well, I mean, since I've been having my slight wiring issues this episode, I didn't quite bring up when we were talking about all these series they're trying to bring back. And of course, there's that one 13-episode series that just never seems to get talked about. But that's as much as I'm going to say about that. The latest news is that they have decided to order a pilot for a remake of Luther, the Idris Elba BBC police drama. And given the recent history of taking foreign, especially British police dramas, and putting them on Fox, I'm finding this a little odd. Apparently they didn't learn their lesson from Broadchurch. They have also made a pilot commitment for Frankenstein, and also a one-hour procedural called Rosewood. about a pathologist who understands the secrets in dead bodies but is obsessed with life, which will be written and executive produced by Sykes Todd Hardam. And amazingly, it does seem that apparently that they are not trying to put House in a different body yet again. Let's see. Also on their pilot news, 48 Hours Till Monday, a single-camera comedy from the Mindy Project's Charles Grandy. And of course, they had previously ordered a Minority Report, and a Ryan Murphy horror show, Scream Queens, which of course went straight to series. In addition to all these things they're trying to bring back, they do have a pretty large slate of things that they are trying to make new or remake new or something like that.
Well, I don't even know. I don't even know what to say, except that maybe there are other networks that are also just trying to go as deep into the well of pain that Fox is. NBC, for instance. You know, Rob Lowe is out there making some fairly funny commercials, at least I think so. Maybe reminding us of some of the better days of his West Wing over and so forth. And then we have this. He's returning to NBC to star in a dramedy. Anytime I see the word dramedy, I get concerned. About the apocalypse.
That's right.
He'll appear in the show for however long it takes you to realize that maybe he's not the most popular character, at which point he will leave so fast that you'll see a smoke trail.
Yeah.
I think it's right in here. He's only going to be in for 6 of the ordered 10 episodes just because. No. Yes, 10 episodes of a show called Apocalypse, a new dramedy, because the apocalypse is funny now, with Rob Lowe, Megan Mullally, Jenna Fisher, and Matthew Bainton, I think. Here we go. It's an out-of-the-box and wholly original project that offers just the right combination of both high drama and humor. Are they trying to intentionally bring up the laughs that many people had watching Revolution?
I can see right. Now. Nobody has a can opener.
Yeah, anyway. I don't know.
Yeah.
Gary, is this news any better? I mean, help me.
Well, let's see. We know Gotham has gotten renewed already, so that gives them a little breathing room. And this article that I'm about to discuss isn't without its some of the points. You know, as we've talked about Gotham already, they've introduced so many characters into the show. But meanwhile, we're never supposed to see Batman, a la Smallville. You know, we've seen the beginnings of the Penguin, the Riddler, Catwoman, Poison Ivy, as well as a host of other villains already, but none has been really in costume or so blatantly in character. Well, that's about to change. They're going to introduce a criminal next season that's known as the Red Hood. He's sort of he does fit in the mold of sort of a gang leader type of person, where he has henchmen that work for him to commit different crimes and things like that. So I think it does fit in. Although he is masked, and for people who don't follow the comic books, there's two different sort of routes you can go with this. The first, more traditional route was the Red Hood was the first introduction of the Joker. That was the character that was underneath the Red Hood when he was first introduced. Later on, it was retconned, I guess, to be a different character. So I'm curious of which direction they're going to go with it. And while we talk about villains in Gotham, you know, typically the Red Hood wore either a tuxedo or a business suit with a sort of cylindrical hood over him, much like, say, a cold capsule if you took half of it apart and put it over your head. So he is wearing a mask of sorts, but as far as, quote, costumes go, he's not wearing a purple striped suit with tails or anything like that. So I don't feel they've crossed that line too much by having him wear a mask, which I imagine will be have much more of a modern spin than the classic comic book presentation.
Oh, no. I want Gotham to have him show up with that stupid red thing on his head.
They're not going to do that. They're really not going to do that.
It would look so ridiculous. And come on, just own it, Gotham. Come on, please.
No, they're not going to go there. But that's no, fine too. So I mean,
a red hat or something.
Yeah, well, or they might even have some sort of stretch mask, almost ski mask type of thing or something like that, without necessarily being a tailored costume. So I think they're making more of it than it is. I think the Cobblepot, for example, is already pretty much wearing the classic penguin costume already, short the top hat. So I don't see why they're making quite the big deal about this quote costumed introduction. So, but we'll see. I think, you know, Selina's already pretty much dressing as a Catwoman already, even Poison Ivy to some extent. So I really don't see that they're stretching it this much. I think this is more just to, you know, stir up the pot or something like that. So we'll see. You know, they have been doing quite an interesting job and entertaining job of portraying the criminal element in Gotham. And so this is going to, you know, add another sort of player into the mix. So I think it's good. They've been doing a good job in that section of the storyline. So I think this will shake things up and move them forward a little bit.
Hmm. Bronstone, the next one, if you don't mind.
Okay. Well, sort of harkening back to the news about casting in X-Men Apocalypse. Well, we know that Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen will not be appearing in the film as Xavier and
Magneto.
We do know now that Storm, Jean Grey, and Cyclops will be appearing. However, it will be the younger versions of them, as befitting the fact that the film will be set in the 1980s. So, Alexandra Shipp, who has apparently done some things on TV, a TV show called... pick about Alaya, and I'm probably mispronouncing that, will be playing Storm. Ty Sheridan, who has done some pretty acclaimed movies, Tree of Life and Mud, which both went over very well in years past. He was from that, but probably the one that we all will get slightly more excited about is that Sophie Turner, who we all know as Sansa Stark on Game of Thrones, will be playing the young Jean Grey. Knowing that actress, I think that's really good casting. And while I don't know the other two actors, I figure I've got a lot of faith in the people running the X-Men franchise at this point. I mean, Bryan Singer's back helming this film. If they reckon that these are the guys to play the part, they'll be the guys to play the part. I have every faith they'll pull this off. I'm looking forward to the film. I'm looking forward to the idea of some of the hero X-Men from that original film, seeing their young newbie versions. And yeah, I'm very keen for this film.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense for them to go in this direction. And really, since we know that Fassbender and Lawrence are going to be moving on from the cast most likely after this next film, it makes sense to kind of lay the foundation for there to be movies that bridge between Apocalypse and the original X-Men film when they were much older. So it gives them a lot of room to maneuver, and also gives them the right time to introduce them coming into the fold as the kind of next class, as the first class, quote unquote, moves on in some way, shape, or form. So, we shall see. I know there was that one news item that we were going to hold off on, and I think it's just because it's going to take a lot more time than I think we're going to have in this episode. So I'll let Gary, if you don't mind, we'll defer on that until a couple episodes from now or so. And then I think we'll go ahead and wrap this one up.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.